This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's Meera Siva. So the hypertension, with its high prevalence and links to other illnesses, is one of the great concerns in medicine. With new guidelines on the disease being released, we speak to Associate Professor Dr. Sazli Kasim. He's a consultant cardiologist on hypertension statistics in the country. Welcome, Dr. Sazli. How are you today?
Thank you, Meera.
You know, many people do not have a clear understanding on what hypertension, and they tend to confuse it with other illnesses and ailments. What is hypertension? How would you define it?
Well, a lot of it is pretty much because of the name, really. Hypertension is not a common name to be used in English. High blood pressure.
Yes. Is it a Malaysian thing or is it a worldwide thing?
Or try translating hypertension to Malay and you get hypertensi or tekanan darah tinggi, which is probably a bit more appropriate.
Yeah.
So when you go around saying hypertension, people don't really understand what it is. But when you say high blood pressure, then people say, well, what's high blood pressure? What's blood pressure? Why is it high in the first place? But what it is because, you know, your heart is a pump and it pumps blood through the blood vessels, which is pretty much like your pipes around the house. If the pressure in the vessels or the pipes are too high, the pipes can burst and explode and leak and stuff like that. You know? So when you have high blood pressure, what you have essentially is the tone and the pressure in those pipes are elevated chronically, meaning for a long, long time. It's not just a once-off, a few days, nope. It goes on for years and years and years. And like those pipes or longgang that you have, when you have like pressure on them for many, many years to go, they become damaged. And it's a damage that is the thing that people will see later on in life. Say when they're 50 or 60, that's when they start having strokes, heart attack, kidney failure, and all those other organ damages. So high blood pressure in itself, or hypertension, it's a silent disease. Everybody knows this. It's a silent disease. And because it's so silent, people don't really care about it. I find that most people who are inclined to find out what their blood pressure is, majoritarily from the urban area.
Okay.
Not from the rural.
Sure. It's, of course, an NCD, non-communicable disease now. And, of course, very lifestyle-related now.
Totally is.
Yeah.
Totally is. I mean, they have high blood pressure in the past, in the 70s and the 80s, but I don't think we have seen this much prevalence and the high incidence of high blood pressure nowadays. It's crazy. It goes hand-in-hand with the way we live our life. The way we wake up in the morning and straight away you're stressed, you rush to work, you bring your coffee in your cup, into the car, drive off, stuck in a traffic jam, more stress. Get to work, you work at 8 o'clock and you go on and on and on to 6 or even in KL, people work to 10 p.m., you know.
How does stress translate to hypertension?
Oh, it's a chronic stress scenario.
What's the science behind it? Could you just explain how it links?
A few ways. When you're stressed, your body is tight, then the body releases a lot of hormones. Some of the hormones are called adrenaline. And what they do is they prepare your body for this stress response, for your flight response. Mm-hmm. You know?
The fight and flight.
Yeah, flight
theory.
And flight. You see a ghost, you run away. That's your stress response, you know? Well, not a ghost, but but if you have that scenario happening day in and day in, day out for say a month or two. What happens to those little tiny blood vessels that is exposed to this high level of stress and these levels of adrenaline, they tend to remodel. They tend to change how they appear or how they look like. So rather than thin walls surrounding the vessel, the walls become thicker.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, those thickened walls will become narrower. Or if you're unlucky, those thickened walls will become very weak and start to burst or become aneurysmal or start to dilate or even those kind of things. If it bursts, you get bleeding. And if you're bleeding outside, which is fine, but if you're bleeding inside a major organ like brain, then you get a major stroke, a bleeding stroke, a hemorrhagic stroke.
So it goes back to hormones then?
No, not just hormones. There's a lot of things that contributes to high blood pressure. Stress is one of them. Lack of exercise is another. When you exercise, you release a lot of happy hormones. Everybody knows that if they're stressed, they go out for a run, say 1 hour later, they feel happy, they feel more relaxed, they feel chilled. And that's the role played by these happy hormones. Nitrous oxide, they open up the blood vessels, they make you feel happy. Serotonin, that's another hormone that makes you feel happy. So exercise plays a huge role.
What about cortisol? Cortisol is the stress hormone, isn't it?
One of the stress hormones.
Okay.
Cortisol is very useful for your body because it pretty
they're
much...
They're all useful. There is a need
useful.
For them.
That's the thing. It's all about in moderation, really.
Yeah.
When you have excessive amount of hormones, that's when your body starts to not liking them, you know? And that's when your body starts to react the opposite way, saying to you, come on, chill, relax, I'm overworked here.
Trying to balance.
Totally is. So cortisol is about the same thing. Your highest dose of cortisol is early in the morning and you get another one late at night. Early in the morning because you need to wake up. Mm-hmm. So you need a lot of hormones to get the engine going, you know? And we see blood pressure rising early in the morning as well. Yeah?
But that's normal.
That's a normal response. Mm-hmm. But you still don't want it to rise too high because it may be a symptom or a sign that you have undiagnosed high blood pressure.
Okay. Mm. There are a lot of us walking around with undiagnosed high blood pressure. Mm. Am I correct?
Totally.
And most of us below the age of 40, I understand.
Even worse.
There is a... Yeah. Oh, dear. What are the statistics? Would you have them?
Yeah. I say the number is about 35. Mm-hmm. So 35% of Malaysians have high blood pressure. So in a population of almost 30 million, that's about 9 million.
That's
almost 10
more
million.
Than a third.
Yeah, more than a third. Correct. And say out of this 10 million, only 35% of them knows that they have high blood pressure. So you're looking at 2 out of 3 people walking out there having high blood pressure mm-hmm. and not realizing it and not knowing it. So, or otherwise, they know about it but refuse to go on medicine. That's another thing.
Right. So that's called denial, being in denial.
Oh, totally in denial.
Okay.
We can talk about that much later. But
yes.
So the 35% that walks around without knowing, that only 35% know, the other 2/3 don't know. So they walk around not knowing. And that's a problem, really, because if we don't catch this young hypertensive, then what tends to happen to them, say 10, 20 years from now on, say they're hypertensive, they have high blood pressure at the age of 30 or early 40s, then by the age of 50 or 60, that's when they start manifesting the damages done by the high blood pressure. That's when they start having the stroke, the heart attack. That's when they start having the lifestyle-related diseases like diabetes, you know, and obesity. So that's where we come in. We have to really raise the awareness and really try to convince people that, you know, having high blood pressure is a serious enough condition. Mm-hmm. You do require treatment, and when we treat you, we would hopefully try and get you to a safe level to try and prevent the sequelae that occurs with it, that comes with it,
right.
Say 10, 20 years. We're not looking at an overnight fix of, say, take this tablet tomorrow, you'll be fine for the rest of your life. No, a lot of my patients ask me, now that I have high blood pressure, do I have to go on medicine for a few weeks or a few months? I said, no, you have to go on medicine for life.
For life.
And that concept really is quite alien to them.
We'll come back to that. But when is the best time to go and get your blood pressure checked? As you said, 2 out of 3 of us, if I walk in tomorrow, will it be an accurate reading?
Ah, that's another point. But when do you start checking your blood pressure?
Yeah.
A lot of our risk data, that is, how do we gauge somebody is at risk from suffering, say, heart attack and stroke and kidney failure and so on, are drawn down from Western studies. So Caucasian, mainly white population. And that's where the slight flaw is, I think. Because I think Malaysians or Asians, we tend to suffer from our diseases at a slightly younger age. You know, our high blood pressure.
It's got to be the suntan.
Lifestyle.
It still goes back to lifestyle.
No, the salt. We're surrounded by water. The salt in our food. And the
salt.
Ajinomoto. Our food is all very tasty. And that's the killer.
Mm.
You know, we try to convince our tourists and everybody else, you know, come to Malaysia where the food is, you know,
but
like,
that's how you go back in time. That's how we cooked.
Yeah, yeah.
Even back in the day.
I don't think so. I don't think we add in as much preservative and as much, you know, Ajinomoto and all those things to our meals in the past. And certainly, I would say we probably don't eat out as much as we do now, especially in KL. Like, we're so busy, so you tend to eat out more. And when you eat out, it's quite scary and it's quite frightening, really. I once stood by this makcik preparing her soup for nasi ayam.
Mm-hmm.
And she was tasting the soup, and it was a big pot, And then she said, it's not enough. So she took a big Tupperware full of salt and she started scooping like 2-3 big ladle full of salt into the the soup. You know, it tasted fantastic, but after seeing how much salt went into it, I was a bit shocked. But that's the thing that we don't realize. Those tasty meals that we're having, you really have to question what's actually making them taste nice and palatable. A lot of it will be salt and salt and pepper
flavoring as well.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Preservative and all those things, and those are the things that really would get to you in the long run.
When is the best time to get our blood pressure checked?
Yeah, absolutely. So, number one, I think we do suffer from high blood pressure at a young age. Certainly do see a lot of young patients with high blood pressure below the age of 35, below the age of 30 even. So, I think as a general rule, once you pass the age of 35, that's when you should start paying more attention to your body. It's like buying a car. Let's say you get a new car, you get 2 to 7 years free service. You know, that's when you're born, really, as a new car. But as time goes on, when the car is like 8 to 10 years and beyond, that's when you have to start maintaining it. And if we don't look after our body, nobody else will.
Yeah.
And after the age of 35, really, maybe get your blood pressure checked at least twice a year.
Right. So when do you do it? I mean, twice a year, but, you know, can I walk into the clinic anytime? And is there a good time to get your blood pressure checked? You want to avoid the morning. If you say blood pressure generally is higher in the morning, maybe you don't want to go in the morning.
So there's a bit of dilemma there as well, because traditionally, we've been diagnosing high blood pressure and only the doctors can diagnose your high blood pressure because the blood pressure monitor and the cuff are in the doctor's practice. So you do have to go to the doctors and get your blood pressure checked. And teaching habit that to get your blood pressure checked, you have to sit down outside, rest, wear comfortable clothing, not do any exercise, don't take coffee or tea. You know, make sure your body is absolutely relaxed and then come in, sit down by the doctor, put the cuff on at, you know, heart level. Do 3 office measurements, separate timing. And if your blood pressure is persistently above 140 over 90, you have high blood pressure. Then you may consider starting treatment. The problem there is that a lot of patients would come in, and even though they try to sit down and relax, they would be very nervous seeing doctors. So they have this syndrome called white coat hypertension. Mm-hmm. Falsely elevated high blood pressure. And if you treat those patients, they might suffer from the side effects of medication, which is not a nice thing to have. Secondly, by just doing random blood pressure checks, you might actually miss out on, say, people who have masked high blood pressure, who are better off if they were to, say, check their blood pressure by using home monitoring and monitor their blood pressure at home, because that's their own environment. Mm-hmm. They're more relaxed.
Yep.
And reflects the true blood pressure reading. The truest method to measure your blood pressure is, of course, if you just take a pressure monitor inside your body, but it's not really practical. When you start treatment, when your blood pressure is consistently above 140 and over 90, 140 is the top number, that's your systolic number. That's the number when your heart is actually squeezing, pumping blood out of the heart. And the other number, the bottom number, if it is more than 90, then you have high blood pressure. What the lower number means is that when the heart relaxes, the vessel is supposed to relax as well. And if the vessel is unable to relax, then and the pressure remains above 90, then it reflects that your blood vessel stone is higher and you have high blood pressure.
Okay. We're always talking about high blood pressure. What about low blood pressure? Does that contribute to any form of problems?
Somebody said to me, I have low blood pressure, will I die any sooner?
Mm-hmm.
They're actually, there's two extremes to it. Yeah. If you're very, very sick and you have low blood pressure, it's a bad sign. It's a grave sign. You know that you're not going to do very well.
Yeah.
But if you're fit and healthy, and women mainly have low blood pressure, if you're fit and healthy and you have low-ish blood pressure, say around 90 to 100, and you have no symptoms, then you really have nothing much to worry about. But if you have low blood pressure and you have symptoms, like you feel dizzy, you can't do work very well, you can't focus, whenever you get up from sitting down, you feel like fainting, then there are certain things that you need to do to try and bring up that blood pressure. it is certainly less harmful than having high blood pressure because there's less damage being done to the structure of the blood vessel itself. Therefore, less damage is done to the brain, less damage is done to the heart. But sometimes having too low of a blood pressure might give you unwanted symptoms that you don't really need. You can't really function.
How much of hypertension is actually hereditary?
How much?
How much of it? 20%?
It's actually higher than that. When you divide up hypertension or high blood pressure, you divide it up pretty much into, say, primary hypertension or essential hypertension and then secondary causes. 80 to 90% of people with high blood pressure would be categorized as essential, meaning that they have high blood pressure due to a combination of genetics. That means that their genes are prone to release things that cause the blood vessel to become more tense. Genetics, a combination of genetics, combination of lifestyle, lack of exercise, smoking, if they drink, then too much alcohol. So a lot of that interacts, and that's when they start having high blood pressure. If your parents have high blood pressure and you really lead a good healthy lifestyle, chances are you get away with it.
Really?
Yeah, chances are you get away with it.
Or you can prolong it.
You can prevent the onset of high blood pressure. What triggers it is stress, salt, and lack of exercise.
How much of it, I mean, take away the genetic component, how much of it is just due to lifestyle?
I say it's almost 50-50. 50-50, if not more, due to lifestyle.
Okay. Yeah. When we come back, we'll find out more about hypertension. The set of guidelines are going to be released this coming weekend, I understand. And Dr. Sazli Kasim will tell us more. If you have a question for him, send it through 016-201-9000 or tweet BFM Radio.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. If you have just joined us, welcome. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Mira Sivisodi, Consultant Cardiologist, Associate Professor Dr. Sazli Kasim with me. We're discussing hypertension, and this weekend a group is actually getting together to release the latest hypertension guidelines in Malaysia. And these are new guidelines. I think the last one was in 2008, was it, Dr.
Absolutely.
Sazli? Yeah, 2008. That's the only thing I found when I was looking through. It's not been released yet, but we'll come back to the guidelines in just a short while. Earlier on, you spoke about how many of us 35 and below who are walking around with hypertension without knowing it, and we seem to be in denial. What could be the causes what could possibly happen if we continue to be in denial? How bad is it going to be?
Denial. Part of it is because we go through school, and those who are in denial are pretty much those who are very, very fit in school, play a lot of sports, no problem, no health issues, and have healthy parents, have healthy environments.
Most of us did back in the day.
Yeah, exactly.
Not anymore.
And then they go to college, and then they reach 20s and start having kids and so on. But that's when they don't realize. When you're 15 or when you're up to 21, you can eat like a horse and not put on weight. That's what happened to me.
Ooh, tell me about it. It's a long time ago.
Yeah, exactly. But when you reach the, I don't know what the magic number is, I think maybe 30, that's when your metabolism starts to slow down and you're probably not burning as much calories as when you were before. So once you reach that age, and if you continue the same amount of, you say, plate full of rice or noodle or roti, whatever it is, that's when you start running into problem, because if you don't curb down your calorie intake and balance it up by exercising, that's when you start piling on the weights. And that's when you start developing the syndrome of having high blood pressure. Along with the excess weight, you're exposing yourself to diabetes and so on. So being a lot of my patients who are in denial would belong to those category. And some of them who are, say, 50 or 60, who have been previously fit, very, very fit, running marathons and stuff like that. And then suddenly I tell them, look, you have high blood pressure. I say, no. Can I just try eating, say, less salt for a while? Or can I try some herbal preparation for a while? I say, okay, fine. You can try all of these things, but you have to be aware that if it doesn't work, you will have to go on treatment. And that's the trick about treating hypertensive patients as well. You really have to get on their side to try and convince them it's bad for them.
Because there are misconceptions, as you said.
Misconceptions.
What are the misconceptions?
A lot of them feel that with some herbal supplements, they can get better. They can control their blood pressure. And to a certain degree, it can. Don't get me wrong. I'm not against those type of individuals. And I would say go for it. Try it first, because you do need to try every single modality before you resort to medication. There are certain patients who I wouldn't dare saying those kind of things, and these are very extremely high-risk patients who, if I don't control their blood pressure straight away, will probably suffer from adverse sequelae like a heart attack or a stroke. So you asked me earlier on, what's the worst-case scenario that could happen to them? Worst-case scenario, driving home from work and suddenly not being able to see. Yeah, transient blindness. And then the next thing they know is they crash the car. Boom. And then they recover. What you had, what that person or individual just experienced is a transient ischemic attack. Mm-hmm. You know, the Greek name for that is amaurosis fugax.
TIA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
and it's for a very short time, isn't it?
A few seconds.
Yeah.
And the classical description is as if you have curtains coming down in front of your eyes. You know, it's like watching a play and the curtains comes down. That's how you lose your vision. And then after a few seconds, when the blood clot behind your eye travels beyond the damaged eye bit, that's when you regain your eyesight.
And this can happen anywhere, not just in the eye.
Anytime. Yeah.
Anywhere. In the body.
When it happens in the eye, it's bad because you can't see. And if you're driving, you crash your car, it's, you know, the after effects is massive. If it happens in the brain, you could be suffering from silent strokes. If it happens in the heart, you might get transient palpitation or a bit of chest pain, a bit of shortness of breath, and then it goes away again. It's a little bit rare, but it does happen. It can happen. And not only does it happen to the brain and to the eye, where you could really see the manifestation, and when patients suffer from those manifestations, it's actually quite easy to convince them because they've already felt something. They felt the warning. But those who did not, these are the difficult ones, you know. They say, look, you had a stroke.
How do you have the patience to deal
with it? You have to have a lot of patience. And you can't stop it. There's a never-ending, you know, war against high blood pressure. Because the way I say to my patient is, look, if you don't look after yourself, you're going to create more work for me. And, you know, I'm already overworked. I don't need any more work, to be honest. But and if they can understand that, then it's fantastic, really. So the thing is about the silent damages that's done by the high blood pressure that people don't actually are not aware of. They're the biggest killer. If you can manifest something, that's fine. You can convince them. But if you can't, then the silent damage keeps going on and on and on and on and on. And sooner or later, before you know it, it's already too late to do anything. And it's not uncommon, especially here in Malaysia, for 40, early 40s, late 30s, to suddenly come in with a massive heart attack. A massive heart attack. And when you have a massive heart attack, chances of surviving is 50-50.
And what's happened there? How did hypertension cause the heart attack?
So what happens is, over years, you have this progressive narrowing of the arteries. The blood vessel reacts to the high blood pressure, so it becomes thicker and thicker wall. When it becomes thicker, it also attracts the cholesterol that is free-floating in the bloodstream. It starts attracting those cholesterol to stick to the blood vessel. Yeah? When the cholesterol starts sticking, the artery becomes narrower. But now you have two processes happening. You have thickening due to, let's say, layers of muscle, and thickening due to cholesterol. And it's the cholesterol that's the naughty one, really, because the cholesterol narrowing could be very stable and progress slowly over time. In the arteries of the heart, it can give you signs of or symptoms of chest pain. You know, you can get symptoms from narrowed artery. The reason is because you're not getting enough blood supply to the muscle due to the narrowing. That makes sense. But if you're unlucky, what happens is the cholesterol that is narrowing off the blood vessel, it actually flakes off and starts to expose part of the blood vessel underneath. And that's undesirable because of two things. When it exposes the underlying blood vessel, then the body will try to heal itself. Imagine this, your skin, you fell, and you graze your skin, you start oozing from it. What does the body do? It starts to form a scab.
Yep.
Yeah. The scab pretty much heals the body. That's the exact same process that's happening in the artery, in the blood vessel. The body starts to try and heal the exposed blood vessel when the cholesterol flakes off. So then, these blood vessels, with the blood flowing inside them, starts to form clots to try and heal that exposed artery. And now you have a scab. Mm-hmm. is fine on the skin because it's a big open space. You can have as much scab as you want. It's only unsightly.
Yep.
When you're in a tiny narrow tube, a scab the size of 2 or 3 millimeters is enough to block off blood supply.
Yep.
That's when you get a massive, massive heart attack.
Oh, yeah.
That's when your chance of survival is around 50-50. Can't call a friend. You can call a friend. Call an ambulance. Right? It's still 50-50. But your best chance of survival at that point is to get to a hospital straight away. Go to IGN or go to any hospital that you know have a cath lab and that can go in and open up the blood vessel. If you can't do that, then go to the nearest hospital and get blood thinning drugs to try and dissolve the clot.
Okay. We have a question from Adam. He's asking, is hypertension reversible?
Certain scenarios. It's reversible if the cause of the high blood pressure is, say, sudden increase in weight. Yeah, number one. Or due to stress, which is of short lasting. When you're stressed, say if you exercise, your blood pressure will rise naturally. That's a normal response. So if you're stressed, your blood pressure will rise normally as well. But say if you're stressed for a couple of weeks, you go to the doctor, your doctor measures your blood pressure and finds that you have high blood pressure, say you need to go on medication. And you very rightly say, no, I think I'm stressed, I'm going to try and relax myself and find a new job or something. And maybe we can check again next month. I say, that's fine with me.
Mm-hmm.
Go off, do what you need to do, come back and see me later.
And one more question from Kumar. He's asking, he says, athletes are said to have a lower pulse rate. Does this mean that their blood pressure is lower?
That usually happens when we have to talk in for an hour. No, the body is very clever. What makes up your blood pressure? It is the amount of pressure that is exerted by your heart when it squeezes, number one, plus the tone of your blood vessel that the blood flows into. So even though the athlete's heart rate is lower, their blood pressure may be lower because of the low heart rate and normal vessel tone, or normal because the lower pressure that's exerted by the heart is compensated by slightly higher pressure by the vessel tone, or unfortunately higher if they have pre-existing high blood pressure before they decide to become athletic. Although frequent exercise does bring down the blood pressure by releasing happy hormones and so on. So you could remodel your blood vessel that way, but you do need to maintain the lifestyle, maintain the exercise frequently. And remember, high blood pressure damages the blood vessel over a period of years. It's the exact same way that you need to do or to apply to yourself in terms of lifestyle modification. That's the same duration of length of time that you have to apply to try and reverse the sequelae of high blood pressure.
Hence the reason why I think people who tend to go back into sports, you know, between the age of 35 and 40, really need to do a medical before, because you have no idea what's happened in the time that you did not exercise.
Totally.
And focusing on your career, focusing on the family, which is something, you know, and then come, it's the midlife crisis. 38, 39, 40. I need to start. And then you think you can go back and, you know, exercise at the pace you did when you were in your 20s or even late teens.
What's the term of it? MIT or Men in Tights or Men in Lycra, isn't it? That's what you see every Saturday and Sunday around the Lake Gardens. And
they're the weekend warriors.
Weekend warriors.
You call them. Good names for all of them.
The risk there is actually this, especially if they used to have, say, an unhealthy lifestyle. Say they used to smoke or they used to be very obese and suddenly they decide to become healthy. Fine. It's fine and dandy. But if they don't keep, if they don't go for their checkups, they do not know what damage has already been done, and they do not know what sort of other comorbidities, what sort of other risk factors they have, like cholesterol and sugar and stuff like that. I've had several patients who used to be heavy smokers and then they receive their enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
They see the light.
They see the light. And they decide to go healthy. And they go to the gym and suddenly they're a lot fitter than me. Skinny, body weight is ideal. And then a couple of weeks later, boom, they get a massive heart attack. And they start asking me, why, doc? Why am I suffering from a heart attack, although my lifestyle is very healthy? The reason is because when they used to smoke and have high lifestyle, their risk, high-risk behavior, their lifestyle is not optimal. At that point in time, they're damaging the blood vessel. Yeah? And it's the same process where it starts to attract cholesterol. And again, the cholesterol could either be stable or it starts to flake off. And for those who decide to go, say, exercise again, and they have their heart attacks and stuff like that, it is because the cholesterol flakes off.
Because of the sudden exercise?
No, not because of the sudden exercise, but because the narrowing or the positioning or the placement of the cholesterol in the blood vessel, as such, it's not a stable environment. And when they exercise, and they exercise vigorously, the constant pumping could actually do them more harm than
it
good.
It displaces
More harm than good. So the advice there is to really do moderate exercise.
When you're starting off after a long time, and
well,
then maybe
if
you
you're
can
starting
become,
off,
and have
lightly.
A baseline reading
yes.
of your health.
Yeah. To start off lightly and then go into moderate exercise without going to the extreme, especially if you're middle age, because you just don't know what's going to happen after that.
Yeah, okay. Can you ever tell, even if you do all the medical checks before?
No, it's
can't
impossible.
Tell. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you can do fancy things like cardiac CT. You can measure. What you can do is you can measure your blood pressure, number one. And then you can take a blood test and look at your cholesterol numbers and rule out diabetes and look at your inflammatory markers. Yeah, there are certain proteins that you can look into pretty much to gauge what's your risk of developing events. Yeah. And then after that, what you can do is you can do, say, a calcium score where you go on, you lie on the table, go into a CAT scan machine, and the x-rays shoots x-rays to your heart and picks up all these flecks of calcium that is lying on the vessels of your heart. And what the theory is that if you have calcium on the lining of the arteries, chances are you probably have underlying process of narrowing that is going on over time. So your risk of developing events is higher. So you can know your calcium score. If your calcium score is very, very high, say more than 400, your risk of getting an event is high as well. But if your calcium score is, say, zero, then you're looking at a very good outlook. We know that study from Mayo Clinic, if you have a calcium score of zero, chances of you contracting or getting a heart attack in the next 5 years is literally less than 1%.
Okay.
So that's very good.
Sure. But can you reduce the calcium levels once you know it?
You can't reduce the calcium because the calcium has already been deposited in
okay.
the blood vessel.
It's like plaque.
Yeah, it's plaque. It's really like dental plaque.
Mm-hmm.
Sticks onto the blood vessel, it doesn't go away. And like a toothbrush or going to the dentist where they could actually scale the
Why
the
hasn't
away?
Anyone come up with some solution to this?
Well, we have. Well, it's just that it's not
statins?
A mechanical thing. Yeah, statins. You know, you have your cholesterol drug. If you go into the hospital...
No, I'm talking about going in and scraping it out.
We do that as well. It's,
well, you can. You
but
can
it's
do.
Not advisable. Only in severely calcified vessel do you need to do it. It's very high risk. You don't really want to do it if you don't have to.
Okay.
Statins, that's the way to do it.
Statins, just a bad word to many people as well. The new guidelines for hypertension will be released this weekend. What are the guidelines? What do you use it for?
Well, Malaysian Ministry of Health have got together since early 2000 and compiled guidelines for majorities for the use of clinicians practicing in Ministry of Health hospitals, university hospitals, even private practitioners. So it applies to all medical practitioners, really. The last time we released a guideline on hypertension, it was 2008. And it's about 6 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And these guidelines are pretty much based on strong experimental evidence that intervening with medicine works for you.
Okay.
So since 2008 and 2013, we've had a lot more evidence to show at what level should you intervene in terms of high blood pressure.
These are local research and surveys, or are they still based on the Western model?
Still based on the Western model. And the guideline will be released in time following the release of the American guideline last year, as well as the European guideline on management of hypertension.
We have something called the Malaysian Society of Hypertension. What does the society actually do?
The society.
And how does it support people with hypertension?
The society has been around for almost 20 years now, actually even more. And the main goal of the society is to try and reduce the burden of hypertension. The problem with hypertension is that it is among the drivers for the formation of cardiovascular disease or cardiac diseases.
Which is the leading cause of death.
Leading cause of death.
Amongst both men and women around the world.
Let's repeat that again.
And in Malaysia. I've done it a million times. A million times. It sits in my subconscious and just comes out even without me knowing.
There you go.
Not cancer.
Not
anything else.
Not pneumonia. Not dengue.
No.
Not HIV or hepatitis.
No.
It's cardiac diseases. In 2020, you'll be looking at, 25 million deaths from cardiac diseases annually around the world.
25 million.
25 million people dying from heart attack and stroke from around the world. 25 million. That's actually a drop in the ocean considering the size of the population. But still, if it's somebody...
That's a vicious thinking.
If it is a relative or it is yourself, you really want to wake up and smell the roses.
Right. So if you want to... The society is there to support, to educate people a lot more on what's going on.
Absolutely.
Okay. So there is a forum, public forum, which is free, happening this Sunday, the 19th of January at the Shangri-La Hotel. What can we expect? What's going on there?
So the forum, so the way the meeting is set up, it's a 3-day meeting. It starts on Friday in Shangri-La, Friday, Saturday and Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much geared up for clinicians and allied health. So we will have talks by international speakers. We actually have 8 international speakers talking during the meeting. And one of them is Professor Dr. Salim Yusuf, who is a world-renowned expert in high blood pressure. Mm-hmm. So we're very lucky to have him here for this weekend. For Sunday afternoon, we actually have 2 events happening at the same time. Number one, we have the public forum, aimed at the general public. And for the first 300 people who attend and register and attend, you could register on the day at the front desk. We will be able to offer them free blood pressure, cholesterol and sugar checks.
Okay.
So we advise them to come in fasting so that they could have a true reflection on their sugar and cholesterol.
What time again?
Between 2 and 6.
Between 2 o'clock and 6. So to fast at 2 until 2 p.m., Dr. Sassi.
Can be done.
That is quite a feat.
It's a mental challenge, absolutely.
But you know what? It's free. It's a public forum, Sunday, 19th January, Shangri-La Hotel. If you'd like to register, you can also register online. Just log on to MSH.my, which is the Malaysian Society for Hypertension, MSH.my. It was a pleasure having you on, Dr. Sazli. Would you like to leave us with a message on hypertension?
Just watch the salt and do regular checkup. And I cannot reemphasize again how much salt we tend to overconsume here in Malaysia. It's easily over the top, I think.
Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you very much.
Associate Professor Dr. Sazli Kasim, consultant cardiologist on, hypertension in Malaysia, on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.